Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to witness some scenes from the next attraction to play this theater. This picture, truly one of the most unusual ever filmed, contains scenes which under no circumstances should be viewed by anyone with a heart condition or anyone who is easily upset. We urgently recommend that if you are such a person or the parent of a young or impressionable child now in attendance, that you and the child leave the auditorium for the next 90 seconds.
Well, hello there, my friends. Welcome to another episode of the Video Nasty Project. Now, you're sitting there saying, well, wait a second. I thought these guys finished up with everything on the DPP list. Why are they coming up with a new episode? Because we want to do a wrap-up. Basically, we went through this magical journey of discovery, and we found a whole bunch of shit, and we found a whole bunch of awesome. And we're going to give you the top 15, or as many movies as we can fit in the next 28 or so minutes. And we'll play with some numbers, and we'll basically just do a end-of-the-list episode. So, please, sit back, enjoy, and we'll be right back. So we have compiled our list of 5 movies each. So by the end of this episode, you will have gotten the 15 movies that you absolutely can't miss.
These are ones you gotta see.
So shall we kick it off?
Blood Feast. My number 5. Partly because of the complete over-the-top humor of it, and partly because of the eyebrows.
And this, in fact, would be a perfect example of what I mean by that Blood Feast, by no stretch of the imagination, is a good movie. It's
no,
a terrible movie.
It is a horrible movie. It is not well done by any stretch of the imagination.
But it is entertaining as fuck.
Yes, it is.
Which is why I went with my number 5 movie is the slightly better Blood Feast. I went with Mardi Gras Massacre.
Yay! Almost the same movie!
Almost the exact same movie, just a different director. Yeah, I went with it just because it is so goofy and just so ridiculous and so inept.
I'm looking for a woman who's evil.
The sinister egg roll ordering scene alone cements it in my book above Blood Feast. However, Blood Feast would be like number 6.
Yeah. I did like the egg roll ordering sequence. That was a lot of fun.
So what was your number 5 then?
I Spit on Your Grave. Yes. Hard for many people to watch, but I can stomach it because I'm more hardcore when it comes to certain things. Also, it took me back to the kind of movies of the type set in the woods in the 70s. I mean, this is a horrible exploitation film, to be sure. But it has a message, a very strong message about rape and condemnation and atonement and the fact that just because something happens behind the scenes doesn't mean it's not happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I cannot dispute that this is an important movie with a strong message. I just plain didn't like it.
It's not something I'm going to watch for fun. It's something you have to brace to watch.
It's one of those you watch once sort of movies, as far as I'm concerned. You know, you watch it once because it's important, and then you're like, I don't have to watch that ever again, and I'm glad for that.
But I think it is a cornerstone of horror. So I think if you have a passing interest in the genre, if you consider yourself a fan, I think you should watch it.
Yeah, it definitely has a lot to offer. There are layers to it, and it was pulled off really well considering the extreme reactions it gets. It obviously did what it set out to do.
So, number 4.
Hell of the Living Dead, which is another movie that is not well made.
Bruno Mattei is an absolute hack who can barely point a camera in the right direction.
The movie is so much fun.
It is so fun. So ridiculously fun.
You know, Bruno Mattei flicks tend to be like Argento flicks or Fulci flicks. You know one when you see one. They tend to have the same connective tissue throughout.
They are very distinct. I can confirm that Bruno Mattei is very distinct.
I gotta admit, Hell of the Living Dead is just so over the top, campy, silly, weird. You know, it really appeals to somebody who sometimes likes to watch bad movies because they're bad, because there's something entertainingly worthwhile in the badness of them.
So my number four, The Werewolf and the Yeti. That was the first Paul Naschy movie I had actually seen. I had heard the name drift past my eyes before, but this was the first time I saw it. And, oh my God, this was so good, even though it doesn't have any Yeti in it. And I wound up deep diving into the rest of his stuff from the two Shout Factory disc sets. I love the fuck out of him now.
That one inspired me to watch a couple of them, too. And I was like, this is some good stuff.
Paul Naschy is the tits.
Although, yeah, The Werewolf and the Yeti didn't actually clash in that movie, ironically enough.
No, okay, it didn't actually have much Yeti in it, but yeah. It had a whole bunch of werewolf, and that werewolf action was awesome.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, yeah, the fight scenes in that movie were just fun.
So what was your number four movie, then?
Oh, one where people get flamed on, literally. Don't go in the house. I mean, this poor florist, the first victim of this fire-obsessed, you know, asshole, basically, who's been, I don't know, his life has gone down the shitter, and now he's literally torching people to death. I wondered, how the fuck did they do that, you know, when I watched it the first time?
It's not a movie that you would reach for pleasure, that I would at least. No. It's a very bleak and nihilist movie.
But it has the most interesting motif. This man is surrounded front to back by fire motifs in the designs of things in his house, on the pillow on his bed, the colors of rooms he enters. Whereas the other people in the movie are usually surrounded by like earth tones or green, his downfall color, because water, fire, you know, fire always succumbs to water. And then he comes up against a woman with a fire motif, and the two kind of clash, and she ends up having her hair set on fire, which is just, whoa. I mean, that movie is something.
It has got a lot to say, I'll give you that. It is a very well-constructed, very well-staged movie that has no business being on the nasty list, because it's got one horrific thing, and then the rest of it's a psychodrama.
It's an interesting one. You've got the references to Psycho. It's kind of a slasher, but not really, aspect to it. And it's not an easy movie to watch, but it certainly is interesting. I enjoyed it, but I wouldn't say that it's... I wouldn't have put it on my top five list. It's a little bit difficult to watch. My number three was Fight for Your Life, another movie with a really important message. I remember watching this with my parents when I was a kid, and it was hard for all three of us to watch, but my dad was like, no, this is an important movie, we need to watch it, because we need to not be jerks about this sort of thing. And we watched it, and all three of us loved it, even though it was a difficult movie to watch. And then I watched it a couple more times later as an adult, and I was like, wow, this is a powerful film.
Yeah, I mean, when I was a kid, I did a lot of the things that the kids in this movie do, the whole Blood Brothers thing with the thumbs, and the clothing, just it took me all back to the 70s. I mean, that lifestyle of having, you know, a well-known family and living in a good house and not in the ghetto like you get with so many families of the type, you know, it really drew me in. I was like, that kid is me. I could identify for the first time, even though I was, you know, 49 when I saw this film, I can identify with this kid, you know, because it's just, yeah, it's just one step removed from
me. I was like maybe 2 or 3 years older than the character when I first watched this movie. So it's not really the sort of movie you'd expect to watch as a kid, but hey, you know, it was something my dad pulled off the video shelf, and but yeah, it's really critical in terms of how to behave, how to get along.
So my number three, then, I'm going to go with The Night Train Murders. Now, it's basically a remake of Last House on the Left, but it takes all of the rough edges that Last House has and smooths them over and gives it this slick Italian style. The way that it uses color, the way that it uses the color to make you feel claustrophobic.
Oh, the lighting in that movie was freaking brilliant. I loved that aspect.
Yeah, and the staging in that train car, in that stateroom or whatever.
And I liked the ending where the woman basically gets away with doing all this nasty, horrible shit and walks away scot-free. I really like that twist.
Well, that was another thing that was interesting about that movie was it plays with your preconceived notions. You know, you start bonding with a character, and then you realize, oh, wait, they're not really a good character. Or you start appreciating the bad characters, kind of, and then you're like, oh, wait, they're not the ultimate bad character. You know, it played with you.
And the one character I thought was the worst of the lot turned out not to be so bad. You know, Blackie. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's kind of got more on the ball than his partner, who's a complete scumbag. And Blackie's like, what the fuck are you doing? Quit doing this. And he turns out to be a better person. He's still a scumbag, but he's a better, you know, kind of scumbag than even the high society, you know, upper class woman these two guys seduce into going along with them. And then she turns the tables on both of these guys. It's kind of a war of attrition between them, even though they don't know what that is.
The movie is a very hard watch, but I think there's enough in there to recommend. So that's why it's on my list. Mm-hmm. So then, Ashley, what's your number three movie then?
Ooh, Ironside and Shatner. I got to go with Visiting Hours.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would put it that high, but it is a very good movie. It's very recommendable.
Yeah, out of the five I have on my thing, I have it up there because of the caliber of the two actors involved and the memory of that TV trailer with the lights on the hospital going out and they turn into a skull, and that just made me not want to see it as a kid.
If you ask anybody of our demographic who is a same age and is a periphery horror fan, they're going to say, I don't remember the movie. You show them that trailer, and we're like, absolutely, I remember that movie.
Yeah, just like Dressed to Kill's trailer. It had me literally running out of the house during the day when my mom and grandma were out front mowing and raking the lawn because the trailer was so scary. The same with Magic, that 70s Anthony Hopkins with a dummy Anthony Hopkins movie. That scared me into running into my mom's room. And then It's Alive earlier in the decade, it had me jumping behind the easy chair in the den at night with the curtains up. It's like, oh, God, I should have lowered them. The things are going to come and get me. Very impressionable, you know?
You do realize that you've just made Mary Whitehouse's point, right?
One of the great things about Visiting Hours is just how clever the characters are. Both the heroes and the villain are really smart about how they go about doing things.
And they let Michael Ironside chew the freaking scenery. I mean, he'd been building his career up in Canada as a stagehand, and then he segued into acting, and he started doing stuff like Scanners. He did Scanners, he did this, he started building up his CV, and this is one of his strongest performances as a bad guy, because a lot of the time he plays good guys or peripheral characters that help the good guys and get hurt, or, you know, mentors. But this one, holy crap. The first thing I'd seen him in was V, before I knew who he was. I hadn't even heard of him in this movie, which came out 2 years before V. But it's like, you know, you go back and sometimes the oldies are the really goodies.
There is a great deal to recommend in that movie, too.
Oh, yeah. And Shatner was really good in this movie. This was back in his, you know, post-Star Trek number one movie, the motion picture. This was pre-Wrath of Khan, so he was kind of floating in that space between Trek 1 and T.J. Hooker.
It really is too bad you didn't have any scenes with both Ironsides and Shatner at the same time.
Apparently they just couldn't afford to have them both. I mean, that much, you know, vitriol and venom on screen just going back and forth at each other.
None of the sets would have survived that day's shooting.
But it's such a clever movie. And, I mean, there's a bait and switch near the end where you're thinking one thing's going to happen and it's another. And it's like, oh, man, I should have seen that coming. That's just like some other movies I'd seen and I fell for it again.
What's your number two movie?
Evil Dead. It's got one of my favorite actors, and he's a lot of fun, too. He just eats up the scenery, and I think the thing that really stuck with me the most, though, was the flying point-of-view camera vision, which I don't think movies did before this point, but you got the demon point of view zooming around and flying and knocking people over. And
it's a very rough but very creative movie.
Definitely.
I mean, this movie has everything. It's got comedy, it's got seriousness, it's got demon cam, it's got everything you expect, and they delivered it in a complete package.
It's a well-written script, it's a well-shot movie, it's a well-acted movie.
Mm-hmm. And it was done on the cheap. Yeah. I mean, these guys had no money. They wanted to do a horror film, so they said, let's make a horror film. And they did, because they were too young to know they couldn't do that. And they did it anyway, which is how you do it.
So what's your number two movie then?
That'd be Possession. Oh, yeah, Andrzej Żuławski.
That's a great film.
This movie is one of the most stunning films depicting the disintegration of a family. And it's got one of my favorite themes, duality in characters, or dualism in characters. You've got two Isabel Adjanis and two Sam Neills in this movie.
Everything about this movie is, okay, it's confusing, it's weird, you gotta think about it really seriously because there's multiple levels, but it is an amazing movie because of the quality of it.
It is not a movie that I would reach for pleasure, but I cannot deny that there is a lot going on under the hood, and that it deserves to be at least on somebody's list, if not necessarily mine.
It has this quality to it, this dreamlike quality, that kind of informs the rest of the movie, and takes this character, Sam's character, this industrial spy who's just come back from a mission, and throws him into the most mundane of circumstances. So what is your number two?
My number two? Okay, you went serious. You went competent and serious. I went with Don't Go in the Woods Alone.
Mm. Oh, that movie's so fun.
Yeah. Yeah, very fun.
There's no redeeming qualities to it. The acting's terrible. The script is terrible. There's no budget. But it's just so fun. It's just so goofy fun. And the reason that I think that that Don't Go Into the Woods Alone is a superior movie to Possession or The Evil Dead, I got three words for you. Four words, my bad. Bear trap to the face. Okay, it's five words. I've got a bear trap to the face, and you don't.
Well, I've got souls being eaten, but
it's a bear trap to the face. Yeah. Come on. That is, hands down, probably my favorite kill out of the entire 72 movies on the DPP list.
You've also got the sleeping bag sequence, which was also fun.
Or just the poor crippled dude wheeling up into the woods up and just gets head chopped off. Come on, how is this?
Yeah, how the hell did that guy get up on that road in a wheelchair? You know, Jesus Christ.
He was determined.
Yeah.
And so that's why I've got Don't Go in the Woods as my number two movie, because it is just so fucking goofy. What is the number one on your list?
Tenebrae. Freaking love that film. I had watched some giallo before watching Tenebrae, but I have to admit, out of the modest number of giallo that I've watched, Tenebrae is my favorite.
It was my first exposure to the genre outside of like other Argento stuff like Dawn of the Dead. I mean, I caught that as a kid. This was my first dive into his work. Oh my God, it was a mind-blowing experience.
It completely plays with your sense of what's going to happen. There's so many surprises and red herrings and reroutes that you're like, oh, this is awesome. I can see how this happened, but I didn't predict it.
Yeah, now, I wasn't as crazy about it, but it does have enough of the requisite scares and whatnot. My first Argento, I think, was Suspiria. I mean,
that's a good movie.
I'd heard stuff about that, and I didn't know it was a part of a trilogy. And then I'd seen he did an edit of Dawn of the Dead where he took Romero's movie and he slashed about 20 minutes out of it and put the Goblin score across the entire thing. And I said, okay, back to Romero. Post haste with, like, all speed. But his own movies, Suspiria, Tenebrae, I think Bird with a Crystal Plumage. I've never seen that one, but I have seen four or five of his
films.
That's
one of his.
And he finished up his Witch trilogy, which was Suspiria and another film, and then he did the third one. I haven't seen it, but I am so I need to see that film in order to get the entire picture of his things. And he has his style, which is very definitively his. You know, mm-hmm. you watch an Argento movie, you go, oh, that's an Argento movie.
Well, we've seen this sort of thing in other directors too. But Tenebrae was just awesome because there's nothing that was done poorly. You know, everything that they did in that movie was well constructed.
Again, going in blind, my first giallo, and I had no idea that it was just going to be this twisty, turny, Gordian knot of plot.
But that's what made it so delicious.
Oh, that's what made it so delicious, but I had no idea what I was in for. And I'm just like, what the fuck is happening? What is going on? My head doesn't accept this.
And what is it with Argento and dogs? There's always got to be a dog, you know, that's got to maul somebody in a movie. But, you know, that's definitely one of the things, you know, he's got his motifs. And he sprinkles them liberally throughout his movies. And one of the best motifs
like
of
Tarantino
his...
It's like Tarantino and Feet.
Yeah. Yeah, well, he's got a foot fetish, a known foot fetish. But, yeah, there's one thing you can always count on, and it's going to be some kind of mauling in an Argento film, just out of left field.
So, what was your number one movie, then?
The Ruggiero Deodato classic from 1979, Cannibal Holocaust.
You would go with that, wouldn't you?
I would. This movie was really important because Deodato wanted to address colonialism in countries where there's still a lot of native culture that many consider primitive and the way they're looked down upon by more advanced, civilized, you know, civilizations.
This is an important film. It's a difficult film. It's not easy to watch, but it's definitely has a very strong message and it's very well crafted, especially since there are comparatively few cannibal movies that are well made.
So it's basically on your list because there's a ton to say in this movie. There's a lot to unpack.
A whole lot, yeah, I would say. I would say it was done really, really well. Seamlessly done.
There are few cannibal movies and also few found footage movies that are that well made. So what's your number one?
My number one, I am going to go with The Beyond.
Okay, I can see that. That's a fine film.
It is so trippy, and I mean, just everything comes together with it. I mean, just the music, just the imagery. Okay, you've got ropey stuff like the spiders. Okay, you've got two real spiders and then like five fake ones, obviously fake ones behind. But I don't care because everything just is this fever dream of insanity, perfection.
Fake-looking spiders could be a hallucination.
Or they could just be hell spiders. We don't know.
Yeah.
So that's my number one, is The Beyond. I got to go with the Fulci well.
Yeah, and when I think Fulci, I never knew what the guy looked like until a few years ago. So whenever I heard the name, I just thought the boxes for the movie. So whenever I hear Fulci, I see dead zombie, you know, rotting face. I see, you know, people in fog. And people getting killed by drill press. So for me, Fulci equals thing.
That is one big pile of shit.
So that's our top 10. What, if you were to pick a movie, what's the one movie you would tell people to avoid at all costs?
I think in my case, I'd have to go with SS Experiment Camp.
Naughty Nazi movies? Yeah, no. I would just say avoid all the naughty Nazi movies. Essex Experiment Camp, Love Camp 7. I would just... No, don't.
Gestapo's Last Orgy.
Gestapo's Last Orgy.
Beast in Heat.
If you have to watch one naughty Nazi movie, The Beast in Heat, because it's 50% at least mildly interesting.
Yeah, it's got some camp value.
Yeah, or if you want to watch a Nazi movie that's twisted but doesn't suck and there's not on the nasty list, Salo.
So what's your number one avoid at all costs movie?
Okay, so whereas you have a great movie with Cannibal Holocaust, you have a shit movie with its knockoff sequel, Cannibal Ferox.
What, you're not down with the Umberto Lenzi?
I love Lenzi's work before Cannibal Ferox. He was supposed to direct one that Deodato did before Cannibal Holocaust, but he had prior commitment, so he would have been following up one of his movies himself, and they kind of switched. This one is completely gratuitous in every way because it basically apes Cannibal Holocaust and does the exact same deaths of some of the animals in similar fashion, only to cash in on the fact they were done in that way by Deodato first. So they're completely superfluous.
And it doesn't have any of the depth or story behind it.
There's no quality to Cannibal Ferox at all.
It's done for gore fans only.
Yeah.
For people who don't have any distinguishing, you know, taste about the type of movie this is. I mean, cannibal movies are a big genre. They're freaking huge.
And there's a lot of them that are actually decent quality movies. And even the ones that are trashy, there's some that are better than this one. Ferox is scraping the bottom of the barrel for cannibal movies, in my opinion.
So my number one avoided at all costs movie is an exercise in sheer laziness, Revenge of the Boogeyman. All it does is take the Boogeyman, cut it down to this disjointed flashback sequence, kind of sprinkles in a dusting of new footage, and completely fucks it up on every level. So it's 50% recycled stock footage and 30% shit.
Which is really bad considering the director then went and redid it.
Again.
Again! As one of the characters in the movie, basically doing in an interrogation room and using sped up footage from the first movie. It's like in black and white in some instances, I think. Something.
Yeah, he was so desperate to turn it into a franchise, it's not even funny. Yeah. So, yes, avoid Revenge of the Boogeyman. Ugh. It's a terrible movie.
Yes.
That's an episode, Ben. There's our opinions.
That's it.
That's it.
That's We're all,
done.
Folks.
We're done. Go home.
We're done. What, you're still here?
And there we go. Our cavalcade of 15-ish movies that we think you ought to check out off of the list. And imagine that. That wraps it up for the entire Video Nasty project. We're finished. Word.
Are you forgetting the third list?
Third list? What the fuck are you talking about? The Prowler? Love Butcher? Wait a minute. What the fuck is all... Phantasm? The Hills Have Eyes? What are you... Hold on a second. Hold on. So, okay. Surprise. There's another list of movies that the DPP put together where you wouldn't go to jail, you wouldn't get fined, you wouldn't go out of business, but they would seize your property. So I guess we're not done with the Video Nasty project. So we're going to take a little bit of a break to get away from this, and we'll catch you in a couple of weeks when we come back with the Section 3 list. See you then, and stay evil.
Research is taking place, and it will show that these films not only affect young people, but I believe they affect adults as well.